నమస్తే నాథ భగవన్ శివాయ గురురూపిణే విద్యావతార సంసిద్ధ్యై స్వీకృత అనేక విగ్రహానవాయ నవరూపాయ పరమార్థైక్యరూపిణే సర్వజ్ఞానతమోపేద భానవేచిద్యునాయితే స్వతంత్రాయ దయాక్లుప్త విగ్రహాయ శివాత్మనే పరతంత్రాయ భక్తానాం భవ్యానాం భవ్యరూపిణే వివేకినాం వివేకాయ విమర్శాయ విమర్శినాం ప్రకాశినాం ప్రకాశాయ జ్ఞానినాం జ్ఞానరూపిణే పురస్తాత్పార్శ్వయోపృష్టే నమస్కోట్యానుపర్యత సదా మచ్చిత్త రూపేణ విదేహి భవదాసనం ఇత్యేవం పంచమి శ్లోకే స్తువీ తేతమాన సహ ప్రాత ప్రబోధ సమయే జపా సుదివశం భవేత్ శివాది గురుభ్యో నమః. ఓకే, ఇన్ ది లాస్ట్ సెషన్ సంబడి ఇస్ ఆన్ అన్మ్యూట్. కెన్ ఎవ్రీబడి గో ఆన్ మ్యూట్? ఓకే, ఇన్ ది లాస్ట్ సెషన్ we started looking at the vimarsha shakti manifestation from a guna perspective. In the whole session we talked about several concepts: pratyaksha bindu, vimarsha bindu, the gunas within the seed, and started to dive deep into the seed and started analyzing the various part of the seed at that atomic level. We looked at the potentials of the sthula, sukshma and karana aspects of these concepts. And we went into detail of the Vimarsha Bindu and described what the sthula aspect of this Vimarsha Bindu could be. We named her Adi Mahalakshmi and saw that she carries the Matulingam, which is the pomegranate fruit, the shield, Gada and Panapatram. She sports the Lingam, Yoni and Nagam on her crown. And we looked into the Tattva aspects of these weapons and how this Adi Mahalakshmi is beyond these Tattvas as well. And then ended with the Sabda Brahmamayi Sloka. Okay. So remember, the entire last week session, even though we talked about the sthula aspects, it's all still at the Bindu level only. One of you asked one question last week, and I'm sure that this must have occurred in others as well. So I'd like to address this question prior to moving ahead. The question was, when you're talking everything at the Bindu state, then how can they have a form? Just like Brahman, which is formless, won't this Vimarsha Bindu also be formless? In fact, if she's beyond the tattvas, when you're saying tattvatita, how can she even have a form? So that's the question. Okay, so absolutely right. She is formless. She is tattvatita, gunatita, niranjana, arupa, shuddha Brahman only. If you're able to see her in that formless state, then you are an evolved sadhaka. This whole form, sthula rupam business is not for you. You can ignore these sessions and enjoy your evolved state of contemplation. But for those who need the form to meditate upon, for those who cannot even relate to the unknown, and those who need something tangible that they can relate with, for those pasujanas, the rishis have formulated a form that might be close representation of what that formless Vimarsha Bindu could be. Make sense? So let's say that you stumble upon a Tarzan child living in the forest. For some reason, you had to discuss the life in Chicago downtown with the Tarzan child. What would the child know about it? How can you explain the lifestyle, the comforts, etc., etc., to the child? Those are all intangible stuff only, but you need a way to communicate and relate that is meaningful to that child. So if the child cannot understand that, it means either the child hasn't matured enough to grasp the concept, or the teacher isn't equipped enough to explain to the child. Neither of these options mean that Chicago does not exist, isn't it? There is no impact to Chicago. It is only the handicap of the child or the teacher and not the fault of the Chicago downtown. Similarly, if you cannot understand the Brahman, or if your guru cannot explain the Brahman Tattvam well, it means nothing to the Brahman. Brahman by itself does not change and has no impact. If the teacher says that the downtown is as big as 10 large mountains and each building is as big as 25 elephants, the child may imagine the building to be 25 elephants standing on top of each other and wondering how they would move. If it is a little intelligent child, maybe it may think it is one huge elephant that is as big as 20 elephants. If it is even more intelligent, it may assume that it is something as big as 20 elephants, but could be a different shape altogether. You see where I'm getting at? So none of those imaginations mean a thing to the actual building in Chicago downtown. All these appearances and transformations are happening only within the child and the teacher who is transmitting these potential descriptions. Are these needed? Absolutely. Without this, there is no way for the child to grasp the unknown. So if I'm saying this Vibhansha Bindu is called Adi Mahalakshmi and has these weapons and has these symbols on the head, for some reason we imagine a woman, we give her a sari, and since I told her that she is in Kolhapur in the temple, we make her wear a sari like a Marathi bhai. We feel that she cannot carry a gada because she is like Hanuman. So she has to rest the gada on the floor, etc., etc. It's all in our head. You see where I'm going here, right? We get too engrossed into these details. We like doing that, just like a child. Try to explain a new concept to a child. It would ask some unrelated questions, like how big would that, for it's same, assume the same Tarzan child, right? So it will assume, it will ask, how big would the poo-poo of that large 20 elephant be? You, and those kind of comments will come. That will be like a mountain only, and we'll start laughing. You would have no choice but to laugh along with the child. Why? Because you sowed that seed within the child. You made that imagination grow. For the child's state of maturity, it can only worry about the poo-poo of the elephant. So let the imagination settle in. Let the child grow out of that poo-poo and start thinking about maybe what the elephant will eat, etc., etc. And slowly that elephant will disappear, and make it imagine the concept around it and possibly imagine a different form, or in this case, the Vimarsha Bindu, which is formless. But it takes a while. In the case of the Chicago building, the thought of the building in the form of an elephant has no impact to the building, and the building as a jata vastu would do nothing. However, in the case of Vimarsha Bindu, it also has the unmatched infinite compassion, isn't it? So take, for example, the case of Prahalada and Hiranyakashipu Samvadam. They were talking, they were having that fierce conversation in the climax. The Lord had no idea how Prahalada would describe the Lord to Hiranyakashipu. He had to be prepared to take whatever form, wherever, whenever, and however Prahalada claims. Can you beat that imagination? Such a form never existed before that, isn't it? Taking a human line form, coming out of a palace pillar, no movie climax can beat that imagination. But think from the Lord's perspective. It enjoys the efforts of its bhakta. It is ever willing to move miles if you move a millimeter. It struggles more than you to make you evolve. Whatever form or shape you try to fit that power in, it tries to adjust to that and consumes that. That is what the Vimarsha Sakti also does. It fills itself in your imaginative form and lets you evolve through it. That's the beauty. In the case of our devatas, several rishis have seen it in a particular form, and hence they have documented that form to be easily, that we can easily relate to. So bottom line, the form of Adi Mahalakshmi is for our own understanding purposes. It has no, absolutely no impact on her. When there is no creation at all at that state, where can there be a sthula element? It is for our own understanding it has given. After numerous sessions of Lalitopakhyana Tattvarthams, Varivasya Rahasya lectures, you all would have trained your mind and understanding to relate with that formless and dwell in the tattva level. But she, as Avyaja Karunamurti, still has to deal with the normal common folks like me too, isn't it? So her form descriptions are for such pasujanas. If you are able to transcend the form and dwell in formless, enjoy the tattva elements of this lecture and ignore the form. I'm dealing with all the dimensions in my lecture so that there will be always some food for thought for all types of sadhakas. So now that question is addressed, let's move on to the guna aspects of the Vimarsha Bindu. I talked about Adi Mahalakshmi as the Vimarsha Bindu. Remember, this Prakasha Bindu and Vimarsha Bindu are not separate. They are one and the same only. I'm simply separating the Vimarsha Bindu only for the understanding purposes. The energy aspect within the Brahman that created the initial spandana is what I'm distinguishing as the Vimarsha Bindu. The moment the spandana happened, the rolling started. Creation is destined to happen. So every single subatomic particles within that Bindu comes alive from that dormant state. Since we are talking about the guna description, guna dimension of the manifestation, we looked into the tamo guna aspect and the sattva guna aspect and how they were named, just for our easy recollection purposes, as Mahamaya for the Tamoguna and Mahavidya for the Sattvaguna. The Rajoguna remained as Mahalakshmi only. So let's now first look into the Tamoguna aspect. And this Vimarsha Sakti, to start the process of creation, has to start somewhere, isn't it? So let's say you are a painter. You are given a wooden board to create a beautiful painting. What will you do first? Assume that the wooden board that you have is already sand well. So the first thing that you would do is coat it with a brass primer. This is what Adi Mahalakshmi did as Vimarsha Sakti. The wood as the whole void, the Jagat, she did the primer coat using her own Tejas. So we covered that last session. So using her own Tejas, she filled this whole void. So that's the primer coat. Then she asked Mahamaya to give the background coat. What does it really mean? The Jagat Adharam is really Brahman. The real Karaneshwari is Adi Lakshmi only. It is only because of her we exist. It is only for her we dwell. It is only in her we merge. Can you separate the painting from its base? Whatever layers you add, it is all in that base only, isn't it? So the Adharam is her only. On top of it, Mahamaya created this tamasic aspect of creation first. This is also indicated in Lalita Sahasranamam. Mithya Jagat Adhishtana. Remember when I say creation here? It is all still within. They are all still in the blueprint state. Even the painting, primer, background coat, whatever I'm talking about, is still in the blueprint state only. So this Mahamaya, for the child in Pasupajanas to relate to, also has four hands. She's dark in color. She has shiny fangs. She has a sword, shield, a severed head, and a panapatram in her hands. She has large eyes, Vishala Lochana, and slender waist. She wore the garland of severed heads, Mundamala, and wore the bodies as her waist skirt. So now you can obviously question, so where did the body head come when there is no creation at all? Yes, you are right. They don't exist at this state. But they are, at the time of this explanation to you, right now, all these exist, isn't it? So for you, only for you to relate, they do exist. And she will take that shape for your own evolutionary purposes. So for those evolved sadhakas who have no interest in these shapes and want to know the true meaning of this, here you go. I already covered the Panapatram and shield in the last session, so I'm going to skip it. So basically, one is to sustain, shield is to sustain, and the other one is to the carrot for the moksham. So what is the sword and the head here? I've talked about the Maya and its works in several lectures already. And hence, this is going to be an easy concept for you all to understand. Maya has two powers. We know all that, right? So one power is Vikshepa Shakti, and the other power is Avarna Shakti. Vikshepa Shakti means to show what is not real as real. Avarna Shakti means to conceal the real. Okay? So in Vedanta terms, this whole Jagat that is appearing as real to us is really non-existent. It's really not real. So this power of Vikshepa Shakti is what is making this whole Jagat appear as real to us. Now, do you understand the base coat after the primer? Why this is needed? So that is the Vikshepa Shakti. Without this Vikshepa Shakti, this whole universe would stop functioning. So this is the first layer that is needed after the primer coating. Similarly, Avarna Shakti conceals the truth. What is the truth here? The Atman, the Brahman, which is the real Adharam of all that exists. We don't see the wood or the primer also. They are all hidden. We only see the painting on the wood and enjoy the painting, but fail to see the obvious, which is the wood, on which the whole painting drama is unfolding in front of you. The sword and the head represents these Shaktis of Mahamaya. But the beauty of these representation is also to show you that even though this is the Vikshepa Avarna Shakti, it also tells you how to get out of those things. It also represents that. So I want you to remember that when we talk about the 36 tattvas from Shiva to Avani, it is the creation process. It gives you the idea of Genesis. But it has already happened. And your existence is a proof enough that it has happened. So how is it going to help you? It is like going to an astrologer to understand the future, and he's telling you everything about your past. You already know about all those, and that is not what you're interested about. We are interested about the future. So we need to go from Avani to Shiva only. So the Samhara Krama, the merging process, isn't it? So whenever you look at the Devata Stula representation, always understand that there is a Srishti representation and also a Samhara representation. Stiti is anyway happening. So when I'm talking about Vikshepa Shakti as a sword representation, it means that the sword basically cuts the real and shows only the unreal. So from a Srishti perspective. But the same sword in the Samhara process tells how to cut through the Vikshepa Shakti and remove the unreal. How? Using Viveka. So here the technique is described as a weapon. Using the Nitya Nitya Vastu Vivekam as the technique, this technique as a sword can cut through the Vikshepa Shakti. What is Nitya Nitya Vastu Vivekam? Vivekam means discriminatory power. Using logical, critical thinking tools to compare, contrast, evaluate, synthesize, analyze every fact that is presented before you to determine what is temporary and what is permanent. We all know that every single actions of ours is towards some goal of Anandam, some happiness, be it food or career or lifestyle or achievement or hobby or relationship, whatever. It can be broadly categorized into one of those four Purusharthams. So everything will fall into those four buckets of Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. Based on our past experiences, we all know that we think as Anandam will be, whatever we think as Anandam will be temporary only. We wrongfully attach Anandam to some attachment. It is very difficult to stop having any attachment. It is easy to say like Buddha, desire is a root cause for all evils. Stop having any attachment. It is not at all easy to do that because the mind will not just allow you to do that. We all would have experienced this when we raise a child. If we want to remove a dirty toy from the hands of the child, what do? You give something else that can be even more appealing to the child, isn't it? So you basically train the child at that age itself that if you have to let go of something, you have to hold on to something else that is equally good or better. Unfortunately, what have we done? It is a mistake of our parents or us as parents that we keep on bringing up generations after generations to constantly hold on to something as means to happiness. That is how we have conditioned our mind from childhood. How can you suddenly ask that to stop it and not to have any attachment? Not possible. It requires a different faculty within to condition the mind. That faculty is the critical thinking power, the Viveka, that will tell the mind that all these years you have been holding on to something or some goal or thought that is going to give you the happiness. What happened after you reached that goal? You may feel the accomplishment maybe for a day or a week or a month or some period of time, but beyond that, you realize that that happiness which you assumed was going to be it, is not it. It is temporary only. Why? Anything temporary cannot give you permanent happiness. So we know that only permanent things can give us permanent happiness. So we start to analyze what those permanent and temporary things are. This is called Nitya or Anitya Vastu. Nitya Vastu is permanent, Anitya Vastu is temporary. This analysis, this analytical process, this discriminatory analysis, this process is called Vivekam. So this Nitya Nitya Vastu Vivekam is the technique to cut through the Vikshepa Shakti. This way, anything that appears as unreal can be discarded. So this Viveka would in turn tell the mind, hold on to this Nitya Vastu. This will never go away so that the Anandam will be permanent. What is that Nitya Vastu? That's the Brahman. That's the Adi Mahalakshmi. That we are talking about, Chandika Parameshwari. You may feel the accomplishment maybe. Okay, so next. What does the, so we understood the Vikshepa Shakti and we understood the sword as a weapon. So next, what does this head mean? That is the Avarna Shakti. How can that represent the Avarna Shakti? The head represents what? The ego. The ego, the I factor, always would hide the true Atman within and project the ahankaram, egoistic I, outwards. This is needed for dwelling in this universe. If you see the wood and not the painting, then where is the scope of enjoying the painting? Right? So Avarna Shakti is needed for creation to happen. Let us look at the other way. How can we get rid of this Avarna Shakti? Okay, that is the cut head, the severed head. Getting rid of this ahankaram, when the I is gone, what can remain? Let's say my ahankaram is gone. Would you become more prominent? would he or she or they become prominent? When I'm not even prominent for me, why would anyone else become prominent? Or would everything including me become equally prominent? Both are good ways to remove ahankaram. Either I care for nobody, I care for everybody. Either I'm an avadhuta sannyasi or I'm a corporate sannyasi. Okay, just kidding. But that's how you think about it. This removal of ahankaram is a sure way of escaping this avarna sakti. So that's the two, the tattva analysis of the two weapons. Tamoguna is represented by dark or darkness, laziness, sleep, ignorance, inactions, fear, etc. So Mahamaya as dark in color makes sense. Due to the fear factor, having the fangs makes sense also. Now this Mundamala and the body skirts is the next question. What do these represent? Mundamala has a totally different representation and it depends on what tantra you're reading. I would like to give some of the representations that I feel are relevant here. And also what I have contemplated within myself about this Mundamala representation. First, a mala represents a cycle. The cyclical nature of the universe, the time representation. So the 51 counts of mala represents the 51 divisions of universe. There is a nyasam called prapancha nyasam. Tantras divide this whole universe into 51 different parts based on various dimensions. Okay, they are prapancha, dvipam, jala, giri, pattana, pita, kshetra, vana, ashrama, guha, nadi, chatvara, udbija. Udbija means germinating, sprouting. Svedaja meaning produced by sweat. Andaja meaning produced by eggs. Jarayuja meaning born out of womb, mammals. Lava, Tripti, Kala, Kashta, Nimesha, these are all time dimensions. Winking of the eye, Swasa, time taken to for a heart breath. Ghatika, 24 minutes. Muhurta, 48 minutes. Prahara, one yamam, which is 3 hours. Divasa is day, 12 hours, Sandhya, Ratri, Tithi, Vara, Nakshatra, Yoga, Karanam, Paksham, 15 days, Masam, 30 days, Rashi, Ritu, 2 months, Ayanam, 6 months, Vatsara, 1 year, Yuga, Pralaya, Panchabhuta, Panchatanmatra, Panchakarmendriya, Panchanyanendriya, Panchaprana, Gunatraya, Antakarana, Chatushtaya, Avastha, Chatushtaya, Saptadhatu, Doshatraya. These are the 51 divisions of the Prapancha Nyasam that divides this whole Prapancham into these 51 divisions. As you can see, there is nothing in this universe that is not covered by these 51 divisions. I've talked a lot about Nyasams earlier. Nyasams, just like any mantra japa, can yield different experiences depending on the bhava of the sadhaka. When a sadhaka is performing the Prapancha Nyasam and can experience the various aspects of the jagat within himself, and by completing this nyatam, seriously think that all the aspects of the jagat is within him only, can stay in the state of that universe and can also be touching the state of the creator. He would know that the creation is not different from him and everything that is in and around are nothing but him. If the nyasa is performed as a mundane touching of the parts of the body, then this anubhava is completely missed out. Okay? Anyway, so that's a different discussion for a different session. So as you can see, this whole universe is represented by these 51 divisions, be it space, time, birth, or the 24 tattvas, etc., etc. Every possible aspect of the universe is covered by these 51 divisions, and this 51 mala represents this. So from a Srishti perspective, the creation of the universe with all its great 51 divisions are represented by the mala. From the merging perspective, how do we cut through this mala? We need to get out of this cyclic nature of the samsara, isn't it? That is also represented by the same mundamala only. The munda represents the temporary nature. The human life is not permanent. You can keep on having multiple janmas and keep adding one janma to another and simply add to the cycle. So realize that this is the cyclic nature, and the motivation to cut out of this comes because of the munda representation. You see yourself as one of the mundas, so that you start to get the fear that if you maintain the status quo, you will end up going round and round and round and never get out of this. The fear that should come by looking at the Mundamala should result in seeking a Jnana Guru and holding his feet tightly as the only way out for salvation. That anugraha is represented by the mundamala. So what about the body skirts? It is another representation for you to understand that you take various bodies, like you wear different clothes. Since it covers the genitals, it also represents the shame and secrets. Again, there are numerous kaula representations and kaula meanings to that I don't want to dwell into. It is enough for you to know that if you maintain the status quo, you will wear numerous bodies, like changing different shirts. The only way to come out of this life death cycle is a secretive path that is revealed to you by your own guru. Whatever your guru says, have no fear, have no shame. Don't analyze if it is right or wrong. Simply follow. Nirbhayata sarvatra, claims Parashurama Kalpa Sutram. That's one of the sutras. So this is one peeled layer of that, of the onion, of the skirts, the body part skirts. Now that you all know what is Mahamaya, right? So I have touched every aspect of Mahamaya. So this Adi Lakshmi looked at Mahamaya and gave her 10 names. They are Mahamaya, Mahakali, Mahamari, Chuda, Trisha, Nidra, Trishna, Ekavira, Kalaratri, and Duratraya. Okay, so they mean, Mahamaya means the great delusion. Mahakali is great darkness. Is that the dark matter or the black hole? Whatever, I leave to your imagination, but that's Mahakali. Mahamari is great death. Chuda, hunger. Trisha is desire. Nidra is sleep. Trikshna is thirst. Ekavira is the only one victorious leader. Kalaratri is dark night. Duratraya is unimaginable. So why these 10 names? These are the 10 different actions that she should be performing, would be performing. Adi Lakshmi also says this, those who understands and can contemplate on these 10 actions would be able to understand her. At the literal level, what do? We do archana to the Devi with these names, Mahamaya Namaha, Mahakali Namaha, Mahamariya Namaha, like, and move on. But what is the actual purpose? Adi Lakshmi clearly states that these names are basically actions of yours. The sadhaka should contemplate on these names and relate with her actions, and then they will understand her, meaning the secrets of this whole creation will be understood. Then most importantly, by such contemplation, will be able to merge back to her. That is the real secret. So that is the rahasya, not just the parayanam. I'm not saying parayanam is bad, you should do that, but that should lead you to contemplation. Parayanam should give you the motivation to take the effort in knowing what the hell is this rahasyam, why is it greatly worshipped. Such contemplation should follow the parayana. Great. Now you have understood the Vimarsha Bindu and the Tamo Bindu, the Adi Mahalakshmi and Mahamaya. Let us now look into the Sattva Guna aspect of the Bindu. We already saw that her name is Mahavidya. What is the Sula description of this Mahavidya? She has four hands, pearl white in color. She carries Pustakam, Akshamala, Veena, and Ankusham. Since this is pure Sattva Guna, it is represented by white. That makes sense. Sattva Guna represents learning, knowledge, Shabda Brahman, Guru, Jnanam, etc. What is the most difficult thing to get rid of? Ahankaram. We already talked about it, right? So how do we normally represent this ahankaram? Like the must of an elephant, madam. How would a mahot control an elephant when it is in must state? By using the goad, the angusam. So ahankara can be controlled by what? Angusam. Angusam means Krodhakarang Shojjula. This chrome bijam is the Angusha mantra. So if you feel that your must is getting too much or your anger is getting out of control, all you have to do is stop everything that you're doing and start chrome japam for 108 times and you'll come back to normal state instantly. You can argue, even if I count 10 when I'm angry, I'll get back to normal state. I'm not talking about that laukika anger here. I'm talking about the must here. I'm talking about your ahankara related stuff, which is much more deeper. So next time you get to that state, do Krom Jabam and see the result. So to get Jnanam, Ahankara has to go away. So having Angusham makes sense. Next, Veena represents the Shabda Brahman, Adharadvani, Anahadadvani, and Divyadvani. In Jainism, the Tirthankars, before reaching the state of Tirthankar, would start transmitting the Divyadvani. This is called the state of Keval Jnan for them. The Sishyas of that Keval Jnani would be able to grasp the transmission of this Divyadvani and start documenting them. This is nothing but the state of Dakshinamurti. He would also not say a word. He'll not open his mouth. He'll be sitting quiet, closing his eyes, but he'll be constantly transmitting his Divyadvani that can be captured and received by the Sishyas. That is Shabda Brahman. It also represents hearing what we like and understand. If a person does not understand, have any liking for, let's say, jazz music, and you keep on playing that for him, it would be horrible, even though it is music. So it has to be to the person's liking. Then the person has to understand also. If you keep on playing Tadari Nana to a guy in Haryana, he may not be able to appreciate that music. So this Veena represents learning through hearing, not just hearing, hearing in a manner that we understand and also the stuff that we like. Listening to Guru Vakyam is the key meaning. Any learning that happens through listening is denoted by this Veena, like Vedas in those days. It's all Shunuyamadevaha, right? So everything is through the ears only. So whatever happening, learning happens through the ears. To get to the state, you need to have the motivation to learn, isn't it? That is again represented by the Akshamala. This mala represents the cyclic nature of this jagat, and the Akshamala is the Matrikas 51, again, Prapancha divisions. It has numerous meanings. Japa, Yajna, Matrika, Sadhana, etc. are all represented by this Japamala. Pustaka, all learnings that happens through the scriptures are denoted. Okay, so one through ears, one through reading, that is Pustaka. So basically, getting the motivation to get out of this life, that cycle, let go of your ego, and only then you can surrender totally, quickly approach a guru, catch hold of his feet, shed all your ego, listen to his vakyas, adhere to it, read scriptures, always be in satsangam. These are all the path to moksha. All these activities are sattva-guna representation. Adi Lakshmi looked at Mahavidya and gave her 10 names and said, these names are your actions, and those who understand and relate this would know you. What are those names? Mahavidya, which is great knowledge. Mahavani, great sound. Bharati, great speech. Vak, voice. Saraswati, is knowledge. Arya, noble being. Brahmi, creative power. Kamadenu, granter of all desires. Vedagarbha, the source of all Vedas. Sureshwari, queen of all Devas, meaning sattva gunas. So for Rajoguna, as I said earlier, Mahalakshmi took care of herself. So it is important for us to understand again that these are all still in the Bindu state only. Nothing has been created or destroyed yet. We have only looked at the blueprint so far and nothing else. These three goddesses that we talked about. So Adilakshmi is its root. From her came Mahamaya, Mahalakshmi, and Mahavidya. They still are in that level only. Samo Bindu, Rajo Bindu, and Sattva Bindu. Okay. So these three goddesses, in turn, through their gunas, created three great goddesses of Devi Mahatmya, which is Mahakali with 10 heads, 10 legs, and 10 hands, Mahalakshmi with 18 hands, Mahasaraswati with 8 hands. So with this, we end today's session. In the next session, we'll look at these three goddesses, what they do, and how these gunas merged to create the creation, etc. Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Deva Maheshwara, Guru Sakshat Parabrahma, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Namaskaram Guru.
Namaskaram Guruji.
Namaskaram Guru.
Thank you.
Thank you Guru.
Namaskaram Guru.
Namaskaram Guruji.